was poorly understood. His ability to deal with personalities, his old blood and guts nickname actually undermines his larger skill in dealing with personalities. He understood psychology. He studied it. And as I demonstrate in the book, he had to deal with different personalities and different individuals at different stages of psychological distress, particularly his corps commanders, who could be more or less aggressive depending on the amount of casualties they were taking. You have to realize that at the end of the day, he has to keep the Army fighting. And sometimes his subordinates don't see the value in continuing to fight and taking the casualties at the rate he was taking casualties. In the Bulge, he was taking casualties at the rate of about 800 a day, killed and wounded. That's basically a battalion lost every single day for the 6 weeks that he was in the Ardennes. So it really comes down to risk management. And he would tell his commanders that at the end of the day, their job was to fight, and that he would decide when the risk was too great, or when they had taken enough. So there are many lessons from Patton that a business executive could apply, and I think there's actually been a few books written for business executives based on the Patton model, the Patton personality.
And, I mean, I know from my readings, he was also... He liked to think of himself as a Renaissance man, and in a lot of ways he was. His cursing, for example, was a tool that he used in communicating with people who were receptive to that kind of thing, who responded to that kind of language. But he could also be the poet, too.
He could be the poet, but unfortunately he realized that to fight the war required soldiers, not so much poets. And throughout the war, you'll see him constantly trying to convince the American soldier that it's better to kill than be killed.
We talked about Patton being a poet. Is there room for a military historian to be a poet, to express yourself through your writing?
Well, I believe there is room, but military historians have to be very, very careful about not imposing their own sense of timeline and sense of pace of military events on the reader, especially civilian military historians who don't understand all the military decision-making processes have a tendency to imprint their own concepts onto a military event. And I try to avoid that. I try to write military history from the perspective of the decision-making apparatus in place at the time. So that's why for the latest book, I really analyzed Patton's generalship through the doctrinal format of the estimate, which basically means Patton is given a problem. He applies the American doctrinal solution of the estimate process. He estimates his own capabilities against those of the enemy. And he tries to come up with a course of action that should guarantee success no matter what the enemy does. And you'll see that in Patton because he's always very, very well balanced. Patton doesn't get taken by surprise. And he's always in a position to respond. That's why I truly believe that it's important for myself anyway. My philosophy is that I write for the military student first. And hopefully I can put enough artistic license into it to capture the imagination and hold the attention of the lay reader.
A master of reaching the lay reader, of course, was Stephen Ambrose, a series of books that were well-received and became movies, that sort of thing. You're not kind of in that school of historian. You are talking to folks who, in many cases, have practiced or are practicing the military arts.
Right, and I want the actual... the content, the sum total of Patton's failures and achievements to stand out by themselves through critical analysis, and hopefully that is compelling enough to attract and hold the reader.
Because there are lessons here for on the human condition, it seems to me.
Well, absolutely. I mean, just to go back to the casualties, I mean, the whole idea of fighting in the Ardennes for Patton, Third Army is very, very tired. They've been fighting in Lorraine for 3 months, fighting an attritional battle for 3 months. The Army is tired. They have few replacements. He's actually cannibalizing his headquarters staff throughout the Army and sending these guys to retrain as riflemen. Now think about the human condition. Think about the psychology of that in late 1944 when you're a clerk or a cook and you're given the order to go to Metz to retrain as infantry riflemen. And everyone knows who takes the highest percentage of casualties. It's the infantry by a wide majority. Wide margin. And then you're put on trucks at night, and you're loaded. You're shipped off into the dark, and all you know is that you're going into the Ardennes, and the Germans are out there somewhere, and they're launching a big counterattack. I wish I could have spent more time on the actual psychology of the individual combat soldier in the Bulge, but there just simply wasn't enough space.
Is that what drew you to this topic? I mean, you've done two books on George Patton. What actually attracted you to
that
topic?
Well, his style of leadership attracted me from the very beginning, even when I was young. Perhaps it's because all my football coaches were mirror images of him as far as being very aggressive, vociferous, loud, blustering, demanding. So I grew up on that sort of philosophy. So as a commander, I could easily see myself serving under someone like Patton. He reminds me a lot of a high school or a college football coach. And that appeals to me. And then as I got into the literature and started to study him, I realized that there were wide variances between people who felt he had no flaws, could do no wrong, and the exact opposite. Those people who really did not like him, thought he was overrated as a commander, didn't like him as a person, as a human being. So those two extremes led me to do a critical analysis of the actual man and the skill level of the actual man. And based on my analysis, there's a whole lot more to Patton than just the bombast and the foul cursing and the slapping of the soldiers in Sicily and the prima donna perception. There's real depth there to his military skill.
Do you find yourself, I often wonder about, getting lost in the personalities that you write about? I always think of Shelby Foote, the historian of the Civil War. He always appealed to me to be sort of some sort of Confederate general, almost looking that part whenever he would speak during the Ken Burns Civil War series. Do you find yourself perhaps getting lost in the Patton persona?
That's a good question. You historians very often become enthralled or they associate fairly heavily with their subject matter. And so I perhaps there's a little bit, I see a little bit of Patton in myself. But the guiding principle for military historians, any historian, has to be strict objectivity. Strict. And sometimes some historians don't abide by that rule. And that's where you lead into wide, extreme statements about effectiveness, or he was a good person or a bad person. That's one of my the key things that I censor myself on constantly, is not to become too closely associated with the subject matter, because it takes you down the wrong road as far as an objective an analyst is concerned.
Captain Rickard, thanks for your time.